All right, welcome back to another episode of Social Kick Podcast. I'm Brian Lundquist, joined by a full virtual crew tonight. Dr. John Mullen, Luke Paddington, and our guest tonight, longtime UCLA women's coach and DC Triton head coach, Cindy Gallagher. What's up, Cindy?
Not much. Just I'm finally back on LA time, and it took a while from Budapest.
Well, give us the download on the bubble real quick.
The bubble was serious business. We had a COVID marshal with us the whole time.
What does that mean? What is a COVID marshal?
Well, she's someone that speaks the language. And she would tell the bus drivers when to pick us up. And she would come everywhere with us. So she would have us walk us into the pool. We had to be separate, completely separate. Mm-hmm. And she wouldn't allow anybody else in the weight room with us or anyone else in the pool with us. We had our own pool. You know, everything was totally separate. And if we were in the lobby and we were drinking, having food, and we had our mask down, like she'd come up and say, "You need to put your mask on." I'm like, I'm in mid bite. And you know, we like put our mask on. So, I mean, it was, ours was great. She actually, her name was Sonia, and she gave us a bus tour because it was like, we'd like to see the city, but we can't get off the bus. So we went in a bus tour and she like did all of her research and gave us a bus tour of the city. You know, stay on the bus tour, and it was got a little bit of history. So, but yeah, it was serious stuff. I mean, we had to eat on our own table. So like when you're talking to people, you're like screaming across the cafeteria or the restaurant talking to people. So that was kind of weird, but we got used to it, and we had to eat it, you know, only with our team. We had to swim only with our team. It, you know, I think people kind of mixed a little bit, but we didn't get to meet as many people as we have in the past, but it really did make for great team chemistry and team camaraderie, especially in the pool, because we used to have, like last year, we had a lot of Indiana swimmers, and other Indiana swimmers would come swim with us, or they would go swim with their workout. But now it's like everyone stayed and trained with our team. So, and we have to like give our every time we walked into anything, we give our temperature and do our hands and, I mean, I would go in my hotel room and I'd forget that I had my mask on. So like 10 minutes into that, you know, the hotel, I'd still be having my mask on because you wore it all the time. So,
you know, what people don't talk about this, but that's seriously one of the biggest successes in sport this year. The NBA didn't have any COVID positive tests that I am aware of, but this was the strictness of this is definitely the model that maybe one can duplicate on a maybe bigger scale, but that's a huge success. 6 weeks, how many athletes? The confidence you had to train, that's fantastic in the age we are now, because there's so many variables that can go wrong, and the ISL just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, they did a good job. I mean, it was serious stuff. So, and I think that we, you know, all appreciated it because we were safe. And, you know, I had talked to a few coaches before we left, and they were like, well, we don't know if I want to send my athlete, you know, because of COVID. And I was like, I wouldn't be going if it wasn't safe. So I feel confident that they're going to do everything they need to do. And they did. So there's a couple people that had it when we flew in, we got tested right away. And then we were quarantined for, I don't know, a day and a half. And then they tested us again. And there was a couple people that had tested positive once they got there. So they were in their room I would walk by this one hotel room for 2 weeks. And all I would see was a food in and food out, food in and food out, you know, and then the hazmat suit on, the person coming in there. So, but actually, I ran into the guy. He was a guy on energy, and he's a Russian guy. And he's like, "Don't worry, I'm okay, I'm okay." Because I literally almost ran into him in the hall. I'm like, "Oh my God, you're out! Congratulations!" And he was so bored, and he didn't have any symptoms, but he definitely had COVID. So he just sat in his room for 2 weeks, and then I think they made him swim, and he's a foreign swimmer, I think, too, and he was really slow. But he said he was really bored. He was glad to be out. So it was kind of funny. I mean, I felt sorry. I would leave the guy like little notes and stuff like, "Hang in there, buddy. I don't know who you are. I don't know if you're a guy or a girl. But man, I'm walking by your hotel room like 4 times a day. And there's nothing. All I see is what you don't like carrot cake and you do like the apples." And, you know.
You can just imagine that he's there behind the peephole like.
I didn't even think about that. That is so funny. He probably was looking. That, maybe that's why you knew who I was. Because when I walked, he's like, "Don't worry, I'm okay. Thanks for the notes. It really helped me out." I'm like, "Oh yeah, I felt so bad. You know, yeah, I feel bad for anybody."
Yeah, no one talked about how successful it was with COVID, or you didn't hear any stories of people sneaking out. There was the one NBA player, Lou Williams, that went to a strip club to get chicken wings. So I didn't hear any of those stories in Budapest. So, I mean, it sounds like obviously the ISL, there's so much to unravel with it. But one positive thing was the bubble.
And right. Cindy, well, go ahead, Cindy. Sorry.
I think it was really great that we were on that island, Margaret Island. And it's the most beautiful island I've ever been on in my life. So, you know, we got to walk around and there was, we got to see people. There were people, but we kept our masks on. And, so we got to go out. But, you know, people were, we were there to swim. So that one time we went on a tour, that was awesome. But I don't know how much more we would have done. And then we had people come in, they had bring in food, a lot of food. The food was really good, but after, you know, 2 weeks, it's like chicken and pasta and rice. And so we had Wolt, like Uber Eats come in, and like, they couldn't even go into the hotel though. They had to like deliver the food outside. But I think being on the island and being able to walk around the island, I think pretty much people did that all the time. There's different places to explore and it was beautiful. I think that made a huge difference too. So people didn't feel like they were like just in their hotel room.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Cindy, you mentioned that you told people, listen, I wouldn't be going if it wasn't safe and you should go. And, you know, John, Brian and I were wondering, you know, the number of reasons why a number of athletes did not go to the ISL. And I assumed one of them was because they were afraid of COVID. They were afraid to get it and they were with the long-term effects and their training. And also coming back from quarantine, the Canadians, the Asians have the quarantine for 2 weeks. Did you experience any athletes who specifically did not come because of the COVID fears, or did you aware of that? You don't have to say names, but were there anyone who made a decision, no, it's too much of a risk for me, I'm worried about, you know, in terms of my training or my long-term health possibility?
No one on our team, but I do know one person, a coach that I talked with. He said he wasn't comfortable with having her go. And I'm like, well, I'm in the age where if I get it, I'm going to be really sick. Yeah. So I'm going, but you know, he just, and in before Olympic trials, and I think there's a lot of unknowns for him. So she pulled out. So that was the only one that I had talked that I knew.
Oh, because Cody was because his wife was pregnant, not because of COVID specifically. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, his wife was pregnant. He didn't, he needed to stay home. Like, what if she had it 2 weeks early? Like, you need to get out of here. Like, he would have been nervous the whole time. So that was really the right thing for him to do. I mean, sad because he swam really fast at the US Open. But so it's such a great experience. You know, you'd hate for him to miss that whole, you know, be gone for 6 weeks, or we were gone for 5 weeks, I think, you know, and miss that whole last 5 weeks of, you know, she needed him there being 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we got a lot more to dig into on ISL, but I want to get back into your background first, and you're welcome to start wherever on this, but as a precursor, I swam at a school that benefited from the cutting of the men's program at UCLA.
You sure did.
and it might be that I'm not sitting here today doing this had those events not occurred. And so I want to hear, like, UCLA, back from the beginning when you first got there, what was it like in the heyday of Ballator? And you know, you've got just like just some legends that came through that program on the coaching and swimming side. What was it like in those days? What do you remember from your early days?
Well, you know, when I swam at UCLA, so Ballatore was the coach, and it was very separate. I mean, we swam at different times, and but we always hung out together. You know, the men and women's team always hung out together. And then I started assistant coaching there, and then the head coach at UCLA left. Tom John, he left, and then they hired me, and I was like, before they hired me, I was an assistant coach making $5,000, and I had a child. And so my daycare was going to cost more than $5,000. So I just said, okay, I can't do it anymore. But I was gone for, and I missed it after like 2 months, and I would still talk to the kids. And I was coaching masters then, and then the head coach decided to leave, and so then they hired me, which was really weird. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. It's a lot of work. And my mom and my parents were like, you will do it. You know, it's UCLA. You got to try it 1 year. You can always quit. So I said, okay, I'll try it 1 year. I'll try it 1 year. And then I loved it. And it was Ballatory. Tom John was Ballatory's best friend, and he was really mad that Tom left. And but he knew me. So I think I was a really good person for him because I wasn't competing against him. He really helped me. I mean, I didn't really know it that much at the time, but he really did help me. His guys did everything. They would paint and, you know, he took care of the pools and, he was so good to me. But some of the things that he would say to me, like when we would swim after them, I'm like, you can't say that, Styx. You cannot say that to me or to any woman. And he would laugh. And I never took anything offense because I knew who I was. But, you know, I really liked those guys. You know, Brian Goodell, I swam with Brian, and Rafa Scalas, and then coaching some of the guys, Andy O'Grady, who passed away in 9/11, and he was the team captain, and Matt Jones. And there's so many great swimmers. And so it was fun to coach with Ballatore because he helped me out. He looked after me. And but when we would swim them, like we would go against Arizona. So we would win, like we beat Arizona, but then they didn't beat Arizona. And then he'd be really mad at me. Like I had nothing to do with it. So that was kind of hard. And he'd start yelling at our girls. It's like, let's just get out of here. but you know, he's just really super, super competitive. And, but the great thing about him is when he left, they dropped the program and, it was hard for me because he was a longtime coach. And I think that he thought, why can't I stay, you know, and why do I have to go? And now Cindy's just staying here and she's not, you know, I haven't been there very long. I haven't done what he had done, but he went to, Brown and then Florida and he used to write me notes. I mean, handwritten notes. I still have. Congratulations, honey. You did great. You know, good job getting this at NCAAs or good job with this Olympian. And it was just so sweet. And I mean, not like Ballatore because he's no one saw that side of him but me. But our he had kids that were the same age as mine. And so I kind of knew him differently. It was really hard when they dropped the program. I mean, really hard because I love UCLA and UCLA. I think it's the greatest place in the world to go to school and to swim and to be an athlete. And it's hard to explain that to people. And still, after whatever, 31 years, still one of the first questions I'd get is, when are they bringing back the men's team? Mm-hmm. And I mean, after 31 years, and it's like, I would have done anything to try to bring back the men's team. And it would have helped my recruiting, that's for sure. Because 17-year-old girls really are concerned about a men's team. And I'd always say, you know, we have other men here. We have the water polo team. They're pretty good. We don't swim together anyway, but it was hard. I felt really bad for those guys, but they also ended up, you know, they were big donors to our program, a lot of the men. And I thought that showed a lot of, class and, support for me and for UCLA. Cause they were, I don't blame them. I'd be mad too, if they dropped the program for whatever reason they said it was. And it was hard. It was hard to work there for a long time. But then I just focused on the great things about UCLA and I just wish they, and it was sad for swimming, sad for UCLA, sad for swimming that they dropped the men's team.
And Cindy, you continued for 15 years after that to still be, you know, women were consistently in the top 10 before that happened. Right. Mm-hmm. And then for 15 years after the cut, you're still in the top 25 with a less attractive recruiting, you know, possibility. Maybe less funding, and you still had Olympians out there. You still, you know, did so well with so much such a disadvantage. What was that? Was it the culture that we've learned about you from Bob and from Caitlin? Was it something that you learned back in, you know, when you joined as a swimmer in 79 that, you know, wouldn't permit a success? You know, was it right. What kept that going? You know, like there's a quote I read, Cindy, and I was like, who said this quote? It says, as long as you try your best, you are never a failure. Who said that?
I'm not sure. Right? Was like it you, me? Right?
No, it's Wooden.
Kind of.
It's Wooden.
Oh yeah. I was going to say.
Talk about that. You still, you know what, that happened, and you still continue to have great success from 94 to when you retired in 2019. Talk about that, that whole culture that you built, where that came from.
Well, I think I really had to work hard to get recruits to come. And I mean, I felt like we always had to work harder, and we were always being recruited against because we didn't have a men's team. And, but, you know, I think when you start off as a young coach, it's always about swimming, you know. You think it's about swimming, but then when you start coaching for a little bit longer, you realize it's not really about swimming. You want to teach them how to be great, how to have confidence in themselves, how to stand up and get a job interview when they graduate. You know, I am a huge student of John Wooden, and I was lucky enough to meet him, and he was my mentor, one of my mentors. But I also was surrounded by great coaches at UCLA, and most of them were student athletes in their mm-hmm. sport, like the softball coaches and the golf coach, and I mean, so many of them, gymnastics coach. So, you know, I had those people around me. When I had a problem, I'd go to them when Coach Wooden had passed away. So, you know, I would teach the pyramid of success, because that is about life. Yeah. And I have the book right here with me, as a matter of fact. This is the book that I would give every kid, that every athlete that graduated, and Coach Wooden used to sign it. He used to sign everything for me.
Whoa.
And I know. So some of them got it, and then I started signing it when he passed away. But it's just one of those books that we talked about, you know, that you're always a teacher when you're coaching them, and you want them to learn and have tough love, but learn and be positive and feel good about themselves. They have a lot of people out there, especially now with social media. They have so many things to compare themselves to that, you know, the last thing you need to do is like beat up on them and not make them feel good about themselves. So I kind of just did that, and have fun. You got to have fun. I mean, if you don't have fun doing it, it's tough, and it's not always fun for me. I really didn't like morning practices, but you still do it. You know, it's part of the world.
I'm going to embarrass you right now. So check this out for the viewers. Ready?
Proven track record of success. She connects with the athletes. You know, she's got a really great demeanor in terms of not getting, you know, really kind of stressed out, or even if she is, she doesn't show it. I think she, you know, gets the idea of trying to create the team environment that's kind of catered to everybody and trying to be inclusive and have fun. You know, that was one of the things they said to her. She said to me when she first called and said, "Hey, look, you know, we're all about trying to have fun, creating."
Oh, so nice, Bob. He's about having fun too. He's like the most positive person I've met. I was like, I thought I was positive. He's like, "Good morning" in the morning. I'm like, "Good morning." You know, I mean, he's, yeah, we had a lot of the same things where, you know, we try to talk to people every day and find out how the day was or whatever. He was really good at it. Like, he's a master at that. So he talks a lot. He talks a lot. So he was really good. He was a great person to have on staff.
Definitely. And we agree. He definitely talks a lot. But I think one important thing that you said was, you know, you got to have fun with it. And I think one thing I learned after talking to one of your swimmers, Ting, was after college, there is this period where you don't have a team. You may not have that camaraderie that you're used to with the college environment where, yeah, there's some pro groups and things like that happening, but it's not really the same as a college program. How did you work on incorporating that with the ISL? And do you think the ISL kind of filled that niche, at least with the bubble here?
Oh, it's the greatest thing ever. I mean, and we had, you know, a lot of, like, I think we had 10 other countries on our team, and they really bought into it, the team thing. And, you know, it's not about you, it's about the team. And I mean, we had people having to some events that they normally don't swim, and it was no problem. Like, okay, when do I go? You know, I don't know. It's just really easy to do when you've come from a college. I think it's easy to do. You have to do things to get everyone to know each other and to be a little vulnerable. So we do a little bit of that stuff, you know, I did a lot of that stuff in college. Get to know their stories, and that brought everybody a little bit closer quickly. I said it was like speed dating. You know, we have to get to know each other, because, you know, tomorrow we're going to race and have to cheer, and we don't, you know, but we knew everybody. They knew they knew a lot about people, especially after this time being there for 5 weeks together. Last year was a little different when we had, you know, we were there for 4 days and then gone, and then another place for 4 days. But last year was fun too. I mean, we really did get to know people, but we had one girl on the team, Rosalind, and she didn't speak any English. She was Russian. And by the end, you know, we'd always say, well, not always, but I would try to switch it up a little bit. Like after the meet, we'd say what we did well and what we were proud of ourselves, and then what inspired us. And by the end, after the at very end, Rosalind was actually saying what, in English, you know, what she did well and what she was proud of. And I mean, it was super cool to see that. And yeah, we did some fun things to get to recognize people. I mean, everybody has value, everybody. And I really, you know, even the kids that sat out, I had a really hard time, you know, telling them, okay, you're sitting out. But I think everyone kind of bought into like, we're doing what's best. And I am not afraid to ask questions, especially last year. I mean, I didn't really follow men swimming that much once they dropped men. And so I had to learn a lot about men swimming. When Caitlin hired me, it was like I was going through everything. I'm a really good student of the sport, so I was learning a lot. But then I had to learn short course meter times too. And then, you know, but I'd ask guys, like, especially the men, you know, hey, how about swimming this? And he's like, yeah, I don't do that event anymore. I'm like, okay, well then who can swim it? Well, he's pretty good. And I mean, it was last year was a lot more information, but even this year, like I remember some of the guys were texting me. We had a big, it was our third match. It was kind of a big important match, and they're texting me and I'm up in the room and he's like, well, you know, we're all down in the lobby. You want to come down? And so, you know, okay, it's 11 o'clock at night. Yeah, I'll come down to the lobby. And they're like, well, we think he can do this and he can do that and he can do this. And, you know, they'd help me with the lineup, and because they know more what they've done in college. And, you know, I take their input and I say, no, he can't do that because he's got to do this. And so it's just kind of, and that's a professional. That's professional versus college, a little bit more where I'm open to that. And I think they appreciate it. I'm not one that has all the answers for sure. And I appreciate them giving me input, and the women too would do that as well. It's like, yeah, you know, she's really nervous about swimming this event so close to this event. And like Amy Bilquist was the biggest team player I've ever met in my life. Wow. I'll do this event. I'm like, Amy, you can't do all of the events, you know. you have to swim this event next. So, you know,
want to do 200 breast?
Yeah,
you really want to do 200 breast?
She would have done anything to help the team or to give someone a break so they could focus on their main event. And yeah, she was a huge team player.
Well, I guess dolphin breast is becoming part of the stroke, so maybe she would have been all right at it, huh?
No kidding. We were talking about that a little bit, actually. I was trying to get everyone to do it. Ian Finnerty was like showing it to me, and then he was practicing it, and so I'm like, hey, you should try this. You might be good at it. So yeah, we'll see. We might see a little bit more of that next year in the 100 AM. I have people that don't do breaststroke, but they might do the 100 AM if they can do that kick. So
exactly. I've been training that kick for years, and who hasn't? I mean, a lot of people that can't do breaststroke, they're like, just sub that in. So why not just make it legal? Yeah, it seems like we're joking about this in a conversation we had over the weekend. Where we're just saying, like, you know, doing that kind of thing. You know, eventually you cheat long enough. If you're really good at it, they'll change the rules for you.
That's right. Oh, your knees, right? My knees. People always say, I can't do breaststroke because of my knees. I'm like, well, then do butterfly. Oh, yeah, my knees are okay now.
I never attempted to race breaststroke. See, that's the thing. My knees definitely hurt on breaststroke, but I never attempted to race it. So it's, I don't know. Hey, I was going to ask you, so you spent years on national team staffs. That's how we met. But ISL coaching is this totally different blend of the team atmosphere with a bunch of professionals who aren't actually your athletes. Right. So what do you feel like you pulled from your college experience that applied really well to ISL? And what do you feel like you peeled from all of your national team coaching experience that applied to ISL?
Okay. Well, so every team did it a little differently because I got to watch a little, we got to watch some because at the end we were having to share the pool because we didn't have as many people because some kids went home early. But like, you know, Dave Salo at Tokyo, he had everybody doing the same workouts. Like he would run the workout. He'd say it in English and then they'd say it in Japanese. And then I think he maybe had one lane of people that did different workouts. But for me, I'm like, our kids aren't going to do that. I'm not going to tell Team Elite what they're going to do. You know, right. I mean, why would I do that? So what I just did was like put people together. It's like, okay, how's your set today? And what are you doing? And hey, Catherine, you don't have anybody to swim. Why don't you swim with her? Or Ting, you swim with them. And so I think that was really, and then they ended up, I did that for like the first week. And then they ended up kind of, I'm going to do this workout this time and this workout the next time. So, I mean, it was hard sometimes when I knew somebody needed to do more than they were doing to say, why don't you go over with Zane? I'm certainly not going to be telling Zane what to do or giving him like, you know, a workout. Right. He knows what he's doing and they're professionals. So, right. But I did like how they all kind of like, they went to different, and it wasn't always the same people. They would kind of go mix with different groups and they're like, I like this workout better than my workout. So they do that workout. So they always had someone to swim with. I think that was good. And those, so I didn't do a whole lot of coaching. You know, we'd get splits and we'd look at things, and most of the time the team would do the teaching, which I think is how you should run a team anyway. You teach the team and then the team teaches everybody else. You know, they keep teaching the younger kids. We did that a lot, team teaching in college, and they did it. They were teaching Zach Harding how to do butterfly kick because he bent his knees too much. So we had Linnea and Amy, you know, were teaching him how to do it. And then his last, he rested a little bit for the last day, but his last meet was great. And then I had a girl, Catherine Demler, she had to do backstroke, doing her back. And she's like, well, how do I do a backstroke short? I'm like, okay, I have no idea. You know, like it's been a while since I've taught a backstroke. Hey, come on and teach her. So we did a lot of that. So like I said, it wasn't that much coaching for me. Everyone did it differently, but I did get to watch other people. I got to see other people's programs and I learned a lot. I wish I was, you know, I kind of wish I was still coaching. Not necessarily morning practices, but because I feel like I always felt like I was getting better. I'm very curious anyway. And I always felt like I could get better. And I learned from a lot of what people were doing, and definitely the power stuff was huge. Different drills that I saw, cause I'm really into technique and, different ways of teaching. You know, you listen to the kids teach how they do it. I'm like, why didn't I say that when I was coaching? You know, that works. So, then I don't know what I learned from the national team. I mean, making relays is always really hard too. And you always make the wrong, you know, you always have the wrong, it always hurt somebody's feelings, but I was like, okay, this is, I'm going to make mistakes. So I'm just giving you what I know, especially with COVID, like you don't really know who's been training and what they've been doing. And like, I knew Linnea and Matt because she's time with me and Ting Wen. I knew that they were, because I know what their work ethic is like, and I know what kind of swimmers they are and people. And, but that is basically all I really knew. And then someone would say, hey, I've only been swimming for 3 weeks. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. Well then you don't get 13 minutes between this event and this event, you know, but, you learn who could do the doubles but you also have to ask them. So I definitely learned as I was going through. Brian,
Cindy has been coaching before you guys were even born.
Oh my gosh.
She's still learning and she's still trying to figure out stuff and she's so hungry. That's remarkable, Cindy. Like, I was swimming. I had my first trophy when you were swimming. So I'm good. I'm an old man. But that's remarkable. What's that drive from? That hunger? I mean, you said you're a swimming nerd, but that's a core thing that you don't teach. That's innate. So that's love.
Yeah. I just think that there's always something, you know, you can always learn something and you can always be better. And I honestly felt that way all the way through. And even when I didn't know I was going to retire until about 2 weeks before I was going to retire. And I just always, you know, okay, next year, this is what we're going to do. And I'm going to bring this kid in and we're going to do this differently. And it was always that way. It's always that way. And I always felt like with women, when they would graduate, they weren't quite ready yet. They needed to swim more. I wish I had 2 more years. Like Kim Vandenberg, I had 6 years with. And, you know, she was great after 6 years. And then she swam 4 more years. But, you know, 4 years isn't enough for them to figure it out. So I'm really, that's the ISL. That's the great thing about the ISL too, is they get to swim longer and they're going to get stronger and smarter and continue to change and continue to learn. And the ISL is just the greatest thing. It's the greatest thing. I'm hoping that we can sustain it. And I wish that every single coach would sit their athletes down when they can get back together and watch it, because you learn so much and it's so great. Like, I learned so much when just in the process of each meet on, oh, this strategy, I got to change this strategy, I got to do this better. And so, yeah, I mean, it gets kids excited, and it got our team. It got the kids that I spoke with, the kids, I call them kids, the athletes that I spoke with, they were more inspired and more motivated after going to the ISL because they were surrounded by like-minded people.
Yeah.
And they got a race, and you, that's what you are here for, to race, not just train.
Definitely. I think, like you said, having the club swimmers getting into it more is going to be huge. I mean, I work with a lot of high school, middle school swimmers recovering from injuries or strength training, and they're not doing great with that market. So right. My thought is, do you think USA Swimming needs to get more involved to promote it? Or
yes, I do.
Okay. what other ways do you think they can go after this demographic? Because I think if they're not getting the age group high school kids, it's going to be a struggle.
Right. Well, having it, you know, and Budapest was great, but having it, like when we went to DC and we went to Indianapolis, so it was the first year last time, and it wasn't that crowded. When we went to Naples, it was packed. And those guys didn't even, those people weren't even swimmers. They were just there because they wanted to see what was going on, I think, and they loved it. But I think just, but it has to come from USA Swimming, I think. You know, I mean, they have to promote it. And they would send a tweet when they broke a world record. So there was a lot of tweeting the last meet, but it's like
that's a world record.
You have to put it on social media. You have to get these kids excited, and it's going to help them. It's going to bring more kids to the team if they're excited about swimming, especially now. Like, what else does anyone have to do? They missed the boat on it, and it's, I don't think it's taking away from USA Swimming. I think it's going to help USA Swimming, going to help bring more athletes in and get kids to swim longer, and will be better, because college is, it's tough in college right now. I mean, we're losing a lot of college teams and a lot of men's teams. So they need to have a bigger base. And I think if you can get people to watch professional swimmers and watch Caleb Dressel, I mean, how great is that guy? I mean, he's great for the sport. He's a great role model. I've never even spoken to the guy, but and even Lily, I mean, she's really blossomed, I think. And she's as tough as nails. Like, she goes 10 200s all out, and then she swims, and she gets beat. And she didn't, no one would know that she just went, you know, the day before, went 10 200s all out. But, you know, I knew that when she was at the end. She must have had a 3,000 practice instead of a, you know, 6,000 practice before the finals, you know.
Well,
so those kids are the ones that are the great role models, and I just think that, I don't know how to do it. I mean, how to promote it. They need to promote it, and they need to.
Well, so why? Who's not listening, or are they under resourced? I mean, like, you guys got a hot microphone and it's like, it's not on or something, or USA Swimming listening. So why?
I have no idea. And I know a lot of people at USA Swimming, but I know that they were worried about the COVID thing, or actually I don't know that personally, but I've heard that they weren't really happy that all of their Olympic athletes, Olympic potential athletes, were going to this and they might get sick. And so, and I can understand that worry, but
yeah, but that's the same line of thinking as to why they wouldn't select, they wouldn't have the 50s a stroke at the trial meets, because it's like the world's medals don't matter as much as the Olympic event medals matter. It's this backwards way of thinking that has, you know, honestly just, I mean, well, what do you want to do? Like, rest on the laurels and continue to be the best swimming nation in the world based on what we've done before, or want to be progressive? And I don't know. I want to figure out whose attention to get, because
it's getting attention yesterday. Small steps, dude. I mean, Caleb was on ESPN Sports Center yesterday. He was on CNN. I mean, the guy had to break 3 world records an hour.
That's not USA Swimming, though. That is USA Swimming pushing it. That's different. That's Caleb just being so amazing. He's making it happen.
But they will follow. They're like, oh, crap, this guy. I mean, Phelps was never on ESPN Sports Center in a non-Olympic year unless he was, you know what I mean? That's so they will follow. They'll catch up, perhaps, I'm hoping.
Right.
Cindy, what about the format of the meet? Okay, so what do you think about I mean, you've been a part of it for 2 years now, so you've seen like a totally different thing this season. And I know going into this season, nobody really knew what was going to happen. So thank goodness it actually happened, right? And
we saw
a totally different product. And ISL continues to get better with their coverage, and like everybody's maturing and learning as this thing goes. And I'm sure like the same is true for everybody who's actually participating in it. But man, like huge rule changes this year that totally threw the whole thing off. And yeah. I mean, debatable whether or not the same team would have actually won the whole thing had the rules been like they were for last year. So what's your reaction to the rule changes, the ones they made, and then like what's being talked about for changing next?
Well, the jackpot, no one was really a lot of people weren't really in favor, at least the ISL, like the swimming, the coaches, the GMs, until it happened. And I think that it's okay. You know, I think it's okay not taking their money, but the ISL also listens to the athletes and they're like, I don't really want to take this guy's money. He's my teammate. So I think they're not taking their money now. So they get to get everyone, even if they're jackpotted, they get to keep their money, which I think is great because you don't want the rich to get richer. Yeah. You know, they're good. You know, they've got a lot of money. They, you know, Caleb has won like a million events.
Yeah.
And almost not a million dollars, but about half.
Just yeah. About. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, the jackpot was different. And I think they always are changing things. I thought the sprints, they jackpotted too much. It was too close of a threshold. Yeah. And, it definitely made kids, approach their events differently. I don't want to get jackpotted. It's like, you know, but we have to put a warm body in there because we're getting at -4 points if we don't have somebody in there, you know, and it's TV. You want to look good for TV. So I think they need to still kind of figure that out because it didn't, when you only have 12 athletes that are swimming, it's really hard to find. I mean, you have to have a 400 swimmer and a 400 IMer because if you don't, then you're going to put people in there that don't really swim that. And then they're going to have to do that instead of their best event, or they're going to be tired for the best event. So, you know, it's crazy. So I think they're still trying to work. I think they're really good at changing things and trying to work those things. That was interesting, the jackpotting and the order of events. You know, that when we were recruiting, that wasn't in the – we weren't recruiting that way. So basically, with jackpotting, you need to have just Caleb Dressels and Lily Kings and, you know, all those other people that are just jackpotting, just the best kids.
Those aren't plural, though. There aren't that many of them. To go around.
I know. They're not
during the order. Like, you didn't know the order of the events or like what was going on when you're recruiting.
Like, it changed. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's massive. Yeah,
they change things all the time. You know, a lot. Yeah. And I get that they're trying to figure out what's going to work. So I'm okay. Second year, we can. You know, that's fine. But yeah, that was like I thought I had a lot of 100 freestylers, and then. You know, we didn't because they're right before the backstroke, or, you know, Amy and Linnea couldn't really do it that much. And so it was, or the 400 free relay was right before the, you know, there's 13 minutes before the 400 free relay and the 50 free. And that was really tough to find somebody to do that on both sides. Zach Apple, he was all about it. He would do anything, you know, yeah, I can do that. I'm like, okay, you got the skins, you know. No, you're not going to do that relay. Like, no, I think I'm good. I'm like, no, you're not. You're not good. We'll find somebody else. But yeah, and then not knowing the skins, I thought that was kind of fun not to have it be freestyle. I really was hoping it wouldn't always be freestyle. And it was kind of exciting to find out what it was going to be. And then like, hey, why'd you do that? Why'd you pick that stroke? And thanks for picking that stroke. that was kind of fun. But, you know, the same people win. You know, I would have gone in and need to have a great backstroker or a breaststroker. You know, you have to have the best if you want to win the relay and win the skins, which is going to kind of determine who's going to win the meet, kind of. Then you need to have a good. We had a lot of 100 freestylers, but I needed a really good back and breast and butterfly and freestyler. So it would have changed things.
Cindy,
it changes things in recruiting.
Your relays swam out of their mind. They swam better than the sum of their parts. Absolutely. I mean, I was so impressed with a lot of that stuff. And I mean, to talk about that, you guys put together some amazing relays. I mean, we saw it and I saw the excitement of you and Caitlin on deck when you guys were like rocking it. Talk about that culture.
Yeah. The mixed relay was super fun. And what I really liked about that is they talked about how fun that was. And, you know, you don't really see that as I wouldn't have thought, oh, the mixed relay is something that was a highlight. But they won the mixed relay a couple times and they, you know, they loved that. And I put like Bethany Gallett in the A relay, in the 400 medley relay. And she was so excited. She was, she'd never been on the A relay before. And, you know, I was always making changes up to the last second. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, they knew how important it was. It was a little hard to get some of the B relays at the end. But yeah, I mean, Zach Apple was amazing. Zach Harding is great in relays. Bobby Howard was great in relays. So we had a lot of Margot Gear. Oh my gosh, great in relays. Ting, great in relays. So it was, you know, that's just part of being the team, a part of the team. So they were great. And some of them literally had 6 minutes before they had to swim the relay. And I'm like, but you're going last. And they're going, all right, I'm in, you know. Look at all this extra time.
You got to love those swimmers that will just step up and get in there. And obviously we're talking about some of the changes from this year. I know looking forward to next year, we're curious what they're going to change. And obviously one of the big topics is, you know, having a draft or trying to have more equality within the teams. Do you see that happening or what other changes are you envisioning for 2021?
Well, I've heard, and I don't really know because no one really knows. I think maybe the GMs know, but then it'll change, you know.
Why is that? Why did nobody know? Who made
Constantine, I think maybe, you know, and they're always tweaking it to make it better until they can figure out how it's going to work. You hear a lot of rumors, but yeah, I've heard the rumor of the draft, like you get to keep 10 people on each side, but you know, Callie Condors has, I mean, pretty much almost all of them are on the national team or Olympians. So they're still going to keep their best swimmers. But then I think that we get our first pick out of the, you know, out of college maybe, but kids out of college sometimes, like last year it was like, oh, this is like a dual meet. And this year I'm like, this is not like a dual meet. It's like an Olympic meet every event because you're with Olympians. You're not, you know, I say, hey, can you swim the 100 IM? Yeah, I can do it. I've done it in a dual meet. Okay, no, you can't swim the 100 IM then. Like, this isn't like who can swim the 100 IM. It's like you got to be able to swim the 100 IM and race it and be great at it. What was the question? I even forgot what the question was. Sorry.
No, just talking about the draft or any upcoming changes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the draft.
Like you said, who knows what's going to happen? And it is interesting that, you know, no one knows what's going on. And I get that they're tweaking. I know there's conspiracy theories, maybe just from Brett Hawk, that all the tweaks are to enhance energy standards' chances of winning. But yeah, it's still exciting. And I like all the tweaks and changes, even if I was skeptical of the skins or the pick the medley relay picking it, but that brought a lot of excitement in my eyes.
Yeah, but John and Cindy, and I did not care or I wasn't sad that Cali won or lost. And Cali's from San Francisco Bay, and that's where I'm. That's where I live. And I don't know. I just felt like I supported you guys because I knew Bob and Caitlin and all that stuff, and Amy, of course. I supported LA Current.
But he's got his own. He ordered an LA Current shirt.
Don't
let him fool you.
Because Bob promised to send me the shirt. Now my point is, it's people don't care about the teams as much, and they need to start caring more. Like, if you're gonna be called DC Trident, get a DC Trident home base. Cindy, if you're gonna start it, if you're gonna run that team down where you live, and you know what I mean. Like, get some supportive. Let's wear that UCLA jersey with pride, like we did when we were in high school. You know, let's wear that Auburn swimming shirt. And we talked about this a lot. What do you think about the allegiance? I mean, where were your fans? Did you have fans besides the swim nerds that three of us are? Did you have like? I don't know.
Yeah, we do, and it's on social media. So, you know, Caitlin does a great job with social media, and I think we have a ton of followers. But you know, when you win, you get more followers too. So when you have, you know, Caleb Dressel, you're going to get a lot more followers because he's breaking records. So I wish there was parity, more parity. There's a lot of allegiance to the team. Like, you know, I think the people that swim at with Jason Lezak, they love that guy, And, you know, there's a lot of money if you get in the top four. I mean, it was really hard for us to leave. I didn't really think that we were going to leave. I thought we'd be in the top eight, and that wasn't fun. So, but, you know, I think that we did the best that we could with what we had with COVID. And we had great kids step up. Yeah, they asked Caitlin if she would move to D.C. And she's like, yeah, I'm from Orange County. I'm not moving to D.C. You know, that's a little different weather. My family's not in D.C. So I'm not really sure at the beginning stages how they came up. I mean, I think they wanted to have teams, you know, different points. But, I, you know, there was a girl, I think she was a sophomore or junior, that contacted me through email or Instagram about, you know, wanting to do something with a team and have the team come out and talk. And I know that last year when we went to Indy, we had Giles Smith and Cody. Those guys were like giving autographs. That was missing this time. You know, after the meet, you'd go and you'd have a line of kids and you give autographs. And that was huge, I felt. And I liked the team. I liked it that we had, you know, we were there for 4, 5, 6 weeks in one spot, because it's not like you're traveling every month. But definitely going to different cities, if we go back, when we go back to that, which I think we will, but is huge, because that's when you're going to get fans. Yeah. And we were, you know, when they were before COVID, we were talking about having two meets in DC. So I think that would make a difference, because those are our fans, and I will wear DC. You know, I love Washington DC, so I'm not going to move there, but I love it there.
Yeah.
And I will, you know, wear that with pride. And I think that if we can go to those home bases a little bit more often, then it'll be worth it. And, you know, how it was supposed to be was a lot longer season. So next year, how it's supposed to be is a lot longer season. So, but I do like the training camp for sure.
They missed out on virtual autograph sessions. Could have done that after the USA swimming promotion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good. I mean, that was really you forgot about it once you were in Budapest, but that was, and they didn't really have it in I went to Vegas just to watch, and they didn't really have it in Vegas as organized as they did in Maryland and as they did in DC. And so, but I mean, that's how you get people. That's how you get people excited about it. And you get kids to come in and watch. You bring teams for free to come in and watch, and the parents have to pay or whatever, you know, and get them excited. And then the team understands that that's what they have to do. And when we have Katie Ledecky, and when we had Siobhan Haughey, and, you know, when we have those Australian Olympians, you know, we're going to get more people excited about the team.
So I want to ask you about those two specifically. You had Katie for one meet last year. DC affiliation, totally get that. Right. And then Siobhan for a year, and then she goes to Energy Standard. First of all, with Katie, any interest in her participating in ISL, or was that really just being part of the new hot ticket? And then why'd Siobhan leave?
No, Katie is all in. You know, Greg Meehan coached with me. He was my assistant for 5 years. So I'm like, can't she come for one more meet? She's another one that really, she doesn't travel before she, before meets, big meets. And I think she was sick before, what meet was that last summer? She was sick during world championships She didn't swim very well. So I think she was just a little nervous, and they had a really good training group. I mean, we tried to get a lot of those Stanford swimmers to come, and none of them came, Katie Drabaugh. But, you know, when I, texting back and forth with Greg, it's like, we've got a really good training group. I'll let them know the opportunity. And Katie, up until the very end, we left that spot open for her, and she was considering it even for a certain period of time, for like 2 weeks, or like Melanie Margalos, she did that. She came for a little bit and then went back home. And then other kids were going to do that, but then they stayed because they saw it was so fun, and they got more training opportunities than they did at home, some of them. So I just think that Katie, with the Olympics, I think that she didn't want to do it, but she will. I'm certain that she's all in. I mean, she loved it. That one meet she was at, she loved it. But she's a planner, and Greg is a huge planner. I mean, he's got his like calendar, and he knows exactly what he's going to do and what set he's going to do. And so, you know, it was. And I'm not going to mess with that before Olympics, before it was canceled or delayed. Right. So, you know, I understand all of that. I mean, she's. I think she would have loved it, And I think it would have been really fun for her, but she's doing what she needs to do to be the best that she can be. So, and Siobhan, and then we lost Andrea Vazio, and also he was a highest point scorer. Right. Andreas, he was going to
year too. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I know, he was awesome. We loved him. He was going to grad school in England, in London. So, and that's, you know, they decided to do that when we were still going all over, you know, the 9 meets that we're going to have. And he's like, I really can't go back and forth, you know, from London to the States, It's just easier for me to be with London and stay in Europe. So, you know, we understood that. And Siobhan, they gave her an opportunity to train there, and she wanted to mix it up, I think. That one hurt because, you know, I thought that there was both of them, you know, but Siobhan, you know, she's awesome. She's great. I wish she would have stayed with us. You know, she got to do the skins with us, you know. She had to do the 400. I looked at him like, 400. And Andreas, hey, I do the 400 IM. I was like, I didn't make you do the 400 IM last year.
That's a huge advantage for Energy Standard, though. Like, you're just saying that they offered her a carrot that no other team has. So how is that fair?
The home base, yeah.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, we don't have that. I mean, Team Elite has that. I mean, she could have gone and swam with Team Elite, maybe. And
there's no ISL.
I don't know. I mean, she wanted to.
LA Current, kind of.
Yeah. But, right. Yeah. Kind of. We had a couple of them, but.
I mean.
Yeah, it is a huge advantage, but I think that is, and I'm not positive because I've never spoken to Constantine about it, but his vision is to have professional teams and training camps. I think New York Breakers is doing that, or they did that. They took their team somewhere before they came to Budapest, or maybe they're doing it afterwards. I'm not really sure. And I think that's his vision to do that. And, you know, we did that kind of with the national training teams. What was that called a long time ago? Or 10 years ago when they had one in Fullerton and
I mean, it's how Team Elite started, but it was,
right.
I can't remember what they were calling them. Elite. Yeah. Whatever. National training centers. Right. But I think, right. But you can, so fine. Concept is great, except for you can't have one team do it or two teams do it. And none of the rest of the teams be able to offer that sort of thing.
Right. Well, but they don't have, you know, they don't have the college system in London that we do. They don't have the college system in wherever Energy's from, or they're all out of the college system. So, I mean, they all train together, the Energy people, pretty much.
Right.
So they can still take all the college swimmers. I mean, they can still say, oh, when you're done with college, come over here. And I guess, I mean, theoretically, you could say Energy's the model. And if it's successful, hopefully the other teams follow somehow. Right. I'm not sure how they're going to have the money or the sponsors to do it, but maybe I don't know. Maybe that's their vision, that if one succeeds, then the other places will figure out how to have home bases as well.
Right, right. Instead of, you know, a lot of kids swimming at Georgia and swimming in San Diego and Indiana, you know. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what it's going to be like in college, too. That's the crazy thing right now. We'll see what happens. So maybe it will be like this. I'm just happy that they have it. And I wish it was better. I wish there was more parity, but I think I'm very grateful that this is an opportunity that all these athletes get to have this opportunity to race and to just be together and make memories and get experience. Because when they go to Olympics, you know, they're going to see the same people that they raced against, and it's not going to be a big deal. So they've already raced them.
Cindy, I'd love to hear from you about inclusiveness. NCAA Division I coaches, 60% of Division I coaches are female. I mean, it's rare. Last year, 25% of the head coaches were female in ISL. This year, 20%. Like 2 of the 10, right, of the head coaches. So how did you? However, ISL did do something that not many others from leagues or teams have done, where MVP was based on points, not on gender. That was refreshing. How did you feel about, beyond just the gender, you know, how do you feel about the gender equality? Do you think that's a good thing? And then you talk about cultural, race, you know, just about overall inclusiveness and diversity of the ISL, because that is right now what we have as our benchmark moving forward, you know?
Right.
Talk about that, because that's important to you, I know.
Right. I mean, there aren't you know, Mel and me were head coaches, but that's it. And last year, even as there weren't very many assistant coaches, females, except for Caitlin's team, which was great. And I tried to do the same thing. You know, I mean, I hired Bob. I know Bob. I'm comfortable with Bob, but I hired Susan Teeter as well. And it's hard to get coaches because it can't be college coaches because of the way being gone for 6 weeks. You know, I've had two really basically two jobs, one at UCLA and one with the ISL, and both of them were women that hired me. So that should tell you something. You know, there needs to be more women to hire women. And, you know, I didn't always hire women as assistant coaches, but I hired a lot of women as assistant coaches. And, you know, you say, oh, well, it should go to the best person. It's like, but women haven't had the opportunity to even be, have the experience. And, you know, the diversity portion is there as well. So you just have to hire more women. I mean, and you have to have more diversity. That's it. You know, it's, you know, I don't know. I loved having both genders. I don't understand why women aren't coaching men more. I just don't understand that. But they're, well, I do understand that because men's athletic departments are male and they're hiring men. So, you know, I don't know how to change that. I just know that I've been really lucky to be hired by two women, and they just need to do a better job.
Cindy, you're part of the example is how you change it to start off with. We talked to Maya Dorado, and when I asked Maya, so did you or any of your teammates consider being a coach? Because I was always on teams with at least two or three guys who knew that they were going to be swim coaches. And you just knew it, and they treated it like the whole approach differently. I mean, Sergio Lopez was telling us about how we would go sit next to his coach and just listen to what he had to say, right? And like that's something that future coaches do, and yet young girls don't get to see that example of this is a possibility of a career path. At least my perspective, from what I'm hearing, not from my own, is that that's the way that. That's the example and the opportunity that the girls have to look at. And so they're not thinking on it the same way that a lot of young boys are. So, I mean, you're part of the example, but yet there's still, you know, we have to see the number go up in order for that to really get planted. But I have to say, you know, having somebody like yourself and then also Mel, who's the coach of one of the best men's swimmers in the world, if not the best, you know, that's a big deal too, because, you know, I can tell you from, I had some growing pains when I went to Auburn and started swimming with Kim Bracken, you know, and she and I laugh now about our first interactions on the pool deck because it was abrasive. And that was an adjustment for me as a male to be coached by a woman. And yet I think we're seeing that stigma go away some, which I think is a positive thing. And so, but there's still a long way to go, but you deserve a lot of credit for the great work that you've laid.
Well, your captain was a black athlete. You only had four black athletes in the entire league, and you made your captain black, and that's fantastic, by the way.
The team chose Giles, so, and he was a great leader. He got really sick, which was such a bummer. Really a bummer, because that guy would do anything for the team, and he was so bummed about it. And the last meet, he's like, am I swimming? And I'm like, what can you give me, Giles? How many 100 flies can you give me? You know, how about some 100 frees? And he's like, I can give you 100 fly. And I'm like, you're relay only then, buddy. Yeah, I mean, even in the recruiting process, I'd have women say they don't want to swim with a woman coach. They don't want a female coach. And I'd be like,
what?
Okay. I mean, it was really hard for me to not get mad at a 16-year-old for saying that. But I mean, seriously, up until the very end, they didn't want it because there aren't any women. And I know it's really hard for women. It was hard for me with a child. And I think they need to do a better job like they do with women's soccer. Like if you have the child come with you and have a babysitter and have that be normal. And mine was never on the pool deck, but you know, you're gone a lot. And so, it's a really hard job and you need to have more support. And I think coaches should have more support. I say I was in coaching for as long as I was because we were on the quarter system. And so I got August off. So when most people would go to nationals, then they go straight to school. You know, I'd go to nationals, then I'd have a month to go on vacation with my kid and my family. So some coaches sometimes don't have a whole lot of balance and they think they have to be there at every practice and every time. And that's not, you know, I would say I'm going to a soccer game for my daughter. So practice this morning is going to be at 7 a.m., you know, and they were like, all right. Or I'd say, I'm going, you know, she's in college. I'm going to go visit her in college and I'm going to be gone on Friday. And they're like, okay. I said, you know, your parents are here on Friday. They're missing work. I'm missing Friday to go visit my kid too. So, but there's a lot of education that goes in that. And
I always knew taper season was coming because David would be on the pool deck a lot more. But like in the fall, I'm telling you, in the fall, David was only on the pool deck like 40% of the time. That's my recollection. Awesome. He might dispute right. that. I mean, recruiting and other things that are going on or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, but my perspective as a swimmer always, as long as I would swim for him was, and not at Team Elite, but in college was like, yeah, you know, the head coach spends their time at different places. But yeah, I mean, I think totally fair that there's got to be adjustments and concessions made to allow for life. And maybe that's a positive outcome that we have from the COVID lifestyle too. Maybe for like in a corporate setting and, you know, John, Luke, and I all have the impacts of you know, remote work impacting our professional careers and just like everybody else in this world. I wonder how that's going to impact the swimming community, especially the coaching community, in terms of life balance and understanding that there are other priorities in life. And it's okay that you can co-manage all of those things. And ultimately that together, doing those at a high level means you get the best product out of everybody.
Absolutely. I think swimmers saw that. That's why they're swimming fast. They took 6 months off and now they're swimming fast. They don't have to do it exactly how they did it. They can take time off and mentally, physically, everything, take time off and do something different and still be okay. There was some fast swimming and everybody was affected by COVID. So some more than others, but still you can't. You just have to look at it differently. You have to look at it. Look at it differently. And same with coaching. It was a lot. I think it's a lot easier to have a combined program, even though I did like separate programs, because I think men and women are so different and they taper different. And I think there's advantages to having a separate program versus combined program. I think you could do. I would have liked it to be separate in the fall and winter, and then in the spring be combined. Spring and summer be combined. So you have a little bit of both for both genders. But, you know, when you're a single gender program, you get one assistant coach and that's it. And a volunteer, if you can find a volunteer and that can come once a day. But, you know, it's hard when you have one assistant coach, whereas if you're a combined program, you have six coaches. So it's a lot easier if you can be gone for 40% of the time. And 60% of the time and do the recruiting and everything when you have five other coaches there. So it's harder to do it when it's a single gender.
Cindy, you said that your two opportunities to be head coaches came from because women hired you. And that's absolutely, we talk about the equality in head coaching positions in NCAA, but do we even talk about the equality in the admin of FINA or of USA Swimming? You know, who's governing the swimming decisions out there? How did this lady who I'm going to play right now get to where she was, and how do we get more of this wonderful person there?
Cindy and I will be right there in the front leading the cheers. And
how do we get her? How do we get more of Caitlin Sandido's young, bright, you know, driven, knowledgeable, smart human beings to be taking our sport to where it needs to be? How do we get there? Because that's what the result is. The result is Ting becoming a coach. I don't know.
I actually have had a lot of kids become coaches, which I'm really proud of. Nice. So I know it's a hard job, but you know, either high school coaches or I actually coached Carrie Hain for a while, and she coaches at Buckley. So I think she's still at Buckley. I'm not going to go any more on that with Gary, her past. You have to have people, women hiring, basically. You have to have women hiring. And, she got the job. Constantine hired and Caitlin got the job because of who she is and what she does and how hard she works. And she deserved it. And she does a really great job.
She applied. She applied and he decided she should be the GM of the team. Is that how it happened?
Yep. I believe that. So I know that she had to go interview in, I think, Switzerland or something.
And who else? Tina is the other GM, and that's it. Yeah.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. So there's, Lenny and Jason and Rob. I just know. Yeah. They're not. There has to be more people that are willing to put women in leadership, and I feel fortunate that. Everyone that the team that I coach is accepting, and I'm retired, which is kind of weird. I'm not in the mix, but I don't think anyone feels like I'm retired when I'm there. I'm not retired. I love this. I love coaching, and they're all open to whatever I say, and they're very respectful. The team is, and so I feel really fortunate that I have the support that I have with Caitlin and of the athletes. And they don't, I don't even know if they even think it's anything weird. They probably have never had a female coach before. Maybe a volunteer coach or an assistant coach before, a lot of them, but hopefully it'll seem more normal.
Yeah, definitely. I think all those aspects are huge for not only college swimming, but obviously national level swimming and probably, every level, let's be honest. But one thing that you alluded to earlier was just the state of college swimming and programs being cut. And obviously at UCLA, the men's program being cut impacted you. Now, sitting from the outside a little bit more, where do you see college swimming going? And do you think there is a scare of many more programs being cut?
I'm not really in the loop in college anymore. It's amazing how quickly I got out of the loop. Yeah. I talked to my UCLA college coaching friends of other sports, and they kind of keep me in the loop just with how different it is now and how hard it is and budgets being cut. So that's kind of how I just don't know how they're going to come up with the money. It costs so much money, and where are they getting the money? For COVID testing every week with these kids, where's that money coming from? So I just, when it comes down to it, it's a business decision sometimes on what you can keep and what you can't keep. And when they cut UCLA's, I think we had 24 sports or 25 sports, and then it was 24 sports, or we had 26 sports and went to 24 sports. It's still more than Texas. We still have more sports offered than Texas does, but, it really is all about money. So it's hard because it's going to really hurt. There's not enough opportunities as it is for men swimming in college. In California, there's not that many men's teams. And then you can only have 20 men. Mm-hmm. I always had a big team because I always felt like I needed to, a lot of people wanted to swim, and so I always had like 35 or something, which is a lot, but I know it is a lot, a lot of women, but I like to give people opportunities because I think it's such a great sport. So it'll be interesting. I just hope they don't, I just don't know how they're going to survive. I just don't know where they're coming up with. If someone came up to you and said, okay, you got to come up with $50,000 next year to live, how are you going to do it? It's hard.
Definitely.
Especially without football.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, for sure. All right, Cindy, let's close it out with a few rapid fire questions. First thing that comes to mind.
No, I'm not prepared for these.
Yeah, that's the thing. Whatever comes to mind.
The mile guys, they all wish that they could be 50 guys.
That's the truth.
That is the truth. All right. What's the hardest race in swimming?
400 IM.
Olympic. What's a bigger deal, Olympic gold or world record?
Olympic gold.
Should swimming and diving in NCAA be a combined sport?
Yes, because I had a great diving coach and a great diving program.
Oh. My mind is blown.
If you could add one new rule change, like the skins being different strokes, like the medley picking, like the jackpot, what's the rule change that you would add to enhance the ISL next year?
Oh, that's really hard. I think maybe if you're in last place, you get to pick the skins, because then maybe you can have a chance to win, you know, after the first day. I don't know. I don't think I would do that. I think 200 medley relays. I would like 200 medley relays instead of 400, or 200 free relays instead of 400 free relays. Just more fast swimming, more mixed races.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go ahead.
If there's a draft next year, and if you have the number one pick, who would you pick?
Whoa.
And you know what? I know who I pick, and I don't remember. I have a list of who I would pick. I did it when I was in Budapest.
You promised me, Cindy. You promised me.
That's right. It's you, Luke. It's you.
I'll be training, okay? 25 fly kick breaststroke pull. Me.
Uh-oh. Have a couple drinks in Budapest and lose the bar napkin with all your notes.
Oh my gosh. No, I don't. There's so many great ones out there that weren't on teams this year. Mm-hmm. So
why do you think that is? The guy
from Iceland, the sprinter from Iceland. Oh yeah, no, that wasn't. I think he's a sprinter. That wasn't with the ISL this year.
Anton.
No, wasn't he with the ISL?
Yeah, he's the ISL. Yeah, Anton's.
No, there's another Iceland guy.
Who else is it?
Oh, I don't remember. I just think the people were nervous about doing this before Olympics, and they didn't want to mess it up. And maybe their coaches didn't want them to go. You know how coaches are; they like to keep their people together.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, all the swimmers coming back and being, at least from what I've heard publicly, overwhelmingly positive about ISL experience, especially how it went this year, that will certainly help within the pro swimming community and continue to build and grow the awareness of the league globally and also the participation in it. Because, like, if you don't have all the top swimmers, it fails. And we're continuing to see a really great quality product, more world records this year, and more excitement to it. So it's awesome to get to talk to somebody who's been live right there living it and contributing to it. So thanks so much for all you've done in the sport of swimming, but also for hanging out with us. And welcome home. Hope you have a happy holidays. Cheers.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and bringing me on.
Yeah, thanks, Cindy. All right, that's it for this episode.
All right, thank you.
Podcast. We'll see you later.